Okay. Here we have some odds and ends, sort of button up the general picture. Several things that we have not touched upon in this unit so far is 1, pre-clears, 2, auditors, 3, theory, 4, techniques. Not having touched upon these, I want to cover these in the next few minutes. The pre-clear is somebody who arrives in the category of most auditors. This is not true. Pre-clear is a pre-clear because he can't arrive. We get source point to receipt point as a manifestation of starting and arriving. Individuals who can't arrive and individuals who can't leave seldom arrive unless you bring them in. Trouble with your pre-clear is communication. Trouble with his communication is he can't let anything hit that receipt point. As a result, he can't arrive. So he might think of coming to see you, but the possibility is he won't be able to arrive. This is also true of some auditors. They aren't able to arrive at the conclusion of course, or they aren't able to arrive at an appointment or something of the sort. But this is really better than not being able to start at all. Of course, your pre-clear is pre-clear because he's not able to arrive. So you immediately must assume then that you're going to have to take some unusual steps to get him there into the auditing room. And there's where the auditor comes in. An auditor thinks he should know about being an auditor at the moment he starts auditing. This is not true. An auditor should know about being an auditor at the time he starts thinking about auditing, and the first thinking about auditing happens to be pre-clears. If one is thinking in terms of pre-clears, he can actually defeat himself if he has such a scarcity of pre-clears that he doesn't believe there are any. Good old expanded Gita, SOP 8, Step 4, run-on pre-clears will do a great deal for an auditor. Run-on money will also do a great deal for an auditor. Your pre-clears are very interesting. They can't arrive, so they require a tractor or presser beam assist from the auditor. He has to do something active about it. And he generally is acting in the sphere of scarcity of pre-clears. And so he doesn't connect with pre-clears. I once upon a time, well, some years ago, I told somebody, I said, let's get into motion here. And I told a whole unit, this whole class, and let's go out down the street and just stop some people and tell them to come around so they can be audited. And, of course, hardly anybody did that. But a week or two went by, and one of the young hopefuls in the class, who was a little more brash than anybody else, he graduated by that time, and he found out that he'd spent 2 whole days with a brand-new fresh certificate in his pocket without a pre-clear. So he simply went out and stopped the first person he met and told him to come on down to the auditing room in order to get audited, and they came down, and he audited them. And so he finished up this, and he sent them a bill, and they paid it. And so he went out, and he tapped somebody else, and he audited them, and he went out and tapped somebody else, and he audited them. Well, he wasn't saying anything peculiar to these people. I thought maybe he was using some sort of a curb or a come-on. No, it was terrifically overt. He just said, you can be a lot better than you are, and what you need is some Dianetics, and I happen to be an auditor, and I'm in practice so-and-so, and this doesn't infer that you're crazy, but if you keep going the way you are, you may be. Now, come on up and see me. And just about that overt line, you know, I mean, no pitch to it at all. I mean, no covert lineup. And, of course, what he was operating on is the pre-clears will answer a summons. And if it sounds enough like a summons, they'll come right on down. If you were to put an ad in the paper saying, Mars Passenger 51, report to certain address, you'd get a lot of people walking up the front steps, and they'd say, all right, here I am. You'd also get a lot of people kicking the bucket just because they read the ad. Report back is a very strong command. So anything that would look very overt and authoritative very well would work. But something that's terrifically covert, like let's get around a half an hour later talking something about your health or auditing or something like that, does seldom work. I have worked this myself many times on pre-clears. I talked to you about pre-clears. Where did I get these pre-clears? I didn't take them off another auditor, which is strange in Scientology. People fall into the bear trap or the bog very easily, very, very easily. One of them, for instance, luckless enough to drive into my front yard and knock on the door. That's really asking for it. He's already arrived and so forth, and he kept trying to talk to me about magazine subscriptions. I was interested in his tale about going through college and that sort of thing, and I said, well, and of course you're going to major in psychology, and as long as the college was a lie, of course he had to add it up with another lie, which was psychology, so I brought him in and gave him some elementary stuff. And he was pre-clear right there. It's very, very easy to make pre-clears. You don't have to be that clever, truth of the matter is. You don't have to be that clever at all. Generally, you find some disabled person around in the community, you'd think as an auditor that that's the person you should get hold of to audit. Well, they don't have an acceptance level getting well. They're sick, aren't they? So therefore, they don't have an acceptance level getting well. So you could only really get there by convincing they'd be made sicker. No, what you want to do is to get a hold of the people that take care of this disabled person whose acceptance level might or might not be sick people, and convince them that they should do something for this disabled person, and then wind up auditing that person who takes care of the disabled person. You follow that? That's very simple, but it's the most effective way I know. I used to run a child procurement service on this line. Never audited a child during all the time that I was saying I was auditing children. I was just auditing mothers and fathers and things like that. That's right. They'd come in, I'd tell them what it could do for the child, and they'd say, well, if it's that good, maybe I need some of it. And I'd say, well, that's a good step forward, setting a good example for the child. Why don't you get audited? It wasn't costing them anything, so it didn't matter. And this is perhaps a little bit covert, but it's about as covert as you'd care to go on an auditing line. Now, as far as getting somebody to arrive is concerned, an auditor has a difficulty there. He can make the appointment and then tell the fellow to show up at such and such a time, but the possibility is the fellow won't ever get there. The number of appointments made in this fashion can be attested to by automobile salesmen. People always come on the lot and say they are going to come back. The salesman knows very well they will not come back. They don't. They may even have intended to come back, but they just aren't able to do that again. That's a duplication, and that's another arrival, and that's just too tough for anybody to crawl through. However, an auditor who is extremely overt and knows his business and that sort of thing doesn't have to worry about this factor of their showing up for an appointment. After you've procured them, audit them. I mean, don't let any time lapse come in there at all. Don't show any anxiety about it. If you meet somebody on the street, why, they say they have a big appointment or something like that, why, lead them down to your office. Always stop them in the vicinity of the office and just bring them on in. It sounds very overt, doesn't it? But there are certain people in this country control the clothing business of this country. And the usual practice of selling clothes in the old days was simply stand out on the sidewalk, and a fellow came along, and fellow said to him, you likely-looking young fellow, you look like you need a new suit, drag him inside, sell him a new suit. Go back out on the street again, stop another fellow, and tell him he needs a new suit, push him in, sell him a new suit. I mean, this is the way it was built up. Now they got a monopoly. Anyway, the point is that an auditor can get so confoundedly covert about his procurement that it just never works. The fault is not with getting overt. You think it is. And the reason for that is the messed universe punishes communication. It punishes people for communicating. That is the main sin. There is really no other sin. People get beat up occasionally for not communicating, but nowhere near like people do for communicating. The mainline sin is communicating. Everybody's suppressed on his communication line. So therefore, anybody who is overt on a communication line generally wins. That's about all there is to that. I mean, you can't get overt enough, but you very easily can get too covert on procurement of preclears. Oh, but thoroughly. You can get just undirective enough to sort of discuss this thing and say that it might do somebody some good, and so on. And you'll make your appointment that nebulously and so on. You just don't get any place as an auditor. I've tested out numbers of ways to procure pre-clears, and I found that the overt ones were the successful ones, and the covert ones never got any place. At a party, for instance, I walked up to a fellow just wondering. I didn't need any pre-clears, but I just walked up to a fellow and I'd say to him in so many words, "Boy, you sure need auditing." "Because I do. Auditing? What's that?" "Oh, a guy like you looks like you have terrific potentials and so forth, and you're standing there and you're probably not getting any auditing. What are you talking about?" He didn't know me from Adam, you see. "Well, I'm talking about Scientology, of course, and what's the matter with you?" So I've just thrown his attention onto himself with a wild crush. Now, he may go off and mutter, and say, "You know, that guy's crazy." You know, he might. He might do that. And then come back and see it. You obviously are surviving, although you are overt in your communication line. And so if you are obviously surviving, and yet you are overt, then what you say must be true. If you're very covert in your communication line, then what you're dealing with can't be very true, can it? The entire activity of people you try to talk to about such a thing as Scientology is to make you more covert about your imparting of information. See, the entire activity. Well, are you sure that's true, or how do you know that? Or, actually, I've heard of that cult, throwing it off the line somehow or another to drive you down to soft pedal or tone down what you were saying. Well, these people simply can't tolerate motion who are doing this one way or the other, and you're in motion, you're communicating. And they don't like this in general. It wouldn't matter what you're talking about. If you were trying to communicate to them directly on a basis where they had very low agreement, why, you'd be having a hard time, too. Just last night, for instance, a lady showed up that had discovered for herself that the mind had something to do with it, because right after her last husband died, why, she felt much younger and much better. She'd had arthritis before that, and her arthritis had gone away immediately upon her husband's death. And she'd considered this very significant, therefore he must have had something to do with her arthritis. This was a very subjective proof in the matter, and she was looking, however, for very good examples, you know, very, very good examples as to why this would do her some good. Well, if I'd had a book at hand to just toss it in her lap so that she could look through this book, it would have been a great convincer. There's no doubt about that. But lacking such a book, there was no reason for me to talk, because what she was objecting to was the fact that somebody was talking. You get the basic objection here. See that? The basic objection of the people you're talking to is that you're talking. You got that. Not about anything. See? Now, they will justify their objection to your communicating by objecting to what you're talking about. So you see, if you've bird-dogged what you're talking about as the real objection, and you think that is a justified objection, you, after a while, will get very covert in your communication line. You should just recognize that people object to you talking. I don't care whether you talk mellifluously or ingratiatingly or overtly or roar like a bull. It doesn't matter. They're going to object one way or the other to the fact that you're communicating. And the worse off they are, the more terrifically covert they will be about this. They will be very covert. Oh, they really worm around the corners. But sooner or later, you'll get a slap. For instance, this boy I was telling you about the other day, whose sister just couldn't seem to get well, you know, because every time she got well, you know, then she'd get vile and she'd move, you know, and he'd have to hold her down and gag her and tie her up to a bed for 2 or 3 days. This very difficult case was nice as pie to me, as long as he was sitting there alongside the desk, which is to say, within reach. Got that? He was within reach. And he was so nice. But he got to the door. And just before he vanished out the door, he made a very nasty crack about Scientologists in general. He couldn't possibly, you see, have made that crack as long as he was within reach. But as I was still seated, and he was at the door, I had not bothered to be polite enough to get up to show him out. Why, this, of course, was his chance. No conversation led up to this remark. It was totally non-sequitur. And he said, well, Scientologists, really, isn't it true they're too immoral to really do anything for a case? At which moment he vanished. This was about as overt as this guy could get. You know, he had to get away to a distance, out of reach, and then he cut and run. But up to that time, he's being very polite. Recognize this, will you, about people who are objecting to your talking. This isn't true that everybody objects to you talking. But when you're having any kind of a mess up in what you're trying to talk about with somebody, the basic objection is the fact that you're talking. It's not true that everybody objects to you talking. Don't let me that impression. But in this specialized case where you're getting any kind of an objection, no matter how covert, the main objection is the fact you're talking. Now, the way to overcome that objection is simply drive it into apathy by talking more overtly and more. Don't try to modify yourself for an agreement. You're sitting in the living room and there's some friends around and they have a guest, and this guest says, well, isn't that a cult or something of the sort, after he's heard your Scientologist? Bird dog him right there. His main objection is the fact that you're talking. He probably considers himself attacked by maybe being an authority. After you go along a little further, you'll find out maybe he's a medical doctor, or he's a chiropractor, he's something. See? Or he has some vested interest, or he minored in psychology in the barber college. That's where they teach that now. And he makes a nasty crack. He'll pretend some vested interest in what you're talking about, see? The thing to do, the proper reaction on your part, is either just shift the subject entirely and just skip it and talk about something that the rest are talking about or interested in. Just shut up at that point. Only shut up loudly. See? There are no halves about this. Just shut up loudly. You know how you shut up loudly? You just look at them with a little surprise and look out and say, it's nice weather we're having, or get off to some banality. Cut him to pieces and ignore him afterwards. Because his main objection is to you talking. That's his objection. That's why he raised an objection. It didn't matter what you said. That's why he raised an objection. Now, he can't raise objections along certain social codes because nobody objects to people talking about these certain things, you see. And the reason he can't object to you talking in general is because you generally would talk about things that are not socially objectionable. We have a social code that says it is permissible to discuss the weather, roads, automobile accidents, Aunt Agatha's operation, business conditions in general, whatever is in the news at the moment. You're not supposed to interrupt people when they're talking about those things, you see. That's socially acceptable, so nobody dares object to those. But you get off the subject a little bit, and if you were to talk about suddenly a llama, you just all of a sudden, you know, just threw in a llama, you'll find all of a sudden people now have the right to object because you're off the subject, you see, of acceptance. So cut him to pieces by a loud silence and shift the conversation the other way. Or there's no halfway point. You don't diddle along saying, well, I don't know, a lot of people say it is a cult, but you know, between ourselves, really there are a lot of sincere people mixed up in this. I know there are a lot of, you know, you don't do that. No, that's what he hopes you'll do. Or you just cut him to pieces. Just cut him to pieces. Say, Scientology is a science. It is a very good science, and it does a lot of things for a lot of people. And start explaining to him very carefully. And if you're really nasty about it, mock him up as a 2-year-old kid and explain it very, very well to him. you think the rest of the people at the party are going to turn on you for doing such a horrible thing. They're with you all the way. If you've got nerve enough to do that, you've got nerve enough to lead them. See that? But they won't be with you all the way if you sort of apologize for having brought it up and kind of mildly introduce the subject one way or the other. Now, you might think this is contrary to your experience on the line, but if you think back over it, the times when you've been very covert along the line might have been socially comfortable to you at the time it was happening, but it did not produce any subsequent result. Got that? Might have been very comfortable at the time it was occurring, but afterwards wasn't productive of a result. If you cut this guy dead, this isn't just in the interest of being nasty. It's just, if you cut this guy dead, you leave a sudden vacuum. It is now up to him to try to lead into the subject, which he knows nothing about. And he can now get into the most dreadful morass you ever heard of. You just left a vacuum. You didn't give him a proper answer. You left a communication line unfinished. You just mock up this vacuum and he just falls in it. He'll have to talk about it. He has no other choice. You can go on ignoring him. The longer you ignore him, the more upset he will be about the whole subject. But he will finally have to go out and buy a book to find out all about this so that he can do something to you about it, see? The other method is the individual. The second you left would have told all the others some great untruth which he had read in the medical manual concerning Scientology or something of the sort. And he would cook any impression that you had made anyhow, unless you'd already cooked him. Now, the boys in the old days in the country town used to sit around the barber shop until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes, because nobody wanted to be the first to leave. The second the guy left, of course, that meant everybody else was going to talk about him. You know, he's no longer there to defend himself. They had a little distance that intervened there. Now, that's a nasty crack. The truth of the matter is, the next time this party who objected to what you were saying is present and you're not, he will make hash out of you unless you've already made hash out of him. So just finish him on the spot. Just finish him. Say, did you ever study Scientology? You studied psychology. Oh, when was that? when was that? Oh. That was from a regular university? Oh, yeah, very interesting. Did you ever study Scientology? You read something. Where did you read this? What issue was that? Who said that? Who said that? Did you read all of the article? I remember the article very well. This throws him off board because he's just invented the article. I remember the article very well, but in the last half, it said it was very beneficial to men in general. Didn't you get down to that? Oh, I see. Well, do you do everything in a perfunctory way like this? Then drop it. The art of conversation and the art of dueling have a great many things in common. And if you are ever dull enough to fail to see this similarity, why... You deserve everything you're going to get in a fight like that. The trick of dueling, of suddenly coming up with your weapon and dropping well back to invite a desperate lunge, is very, very well known to a great many dead men. and the other one is, even in the face of skill, if you just press in a thundering hard attack and just keep on attacking, sooner or later he's going to find a hedge or something at his back and fall into it. I mean, you're just taking a chance that way. Well, in view of the fact that nobody is in the kind of condition to really put up a good fight these days, you're taking a horrible advantage. This guy's dueling you with a hat pin and you've got a broadsword. See? So you just go in overtly and butcher him. Now, this has a lot to do with your procurement of preclears. You wouldn't think so, but it does have. You do an overt communication line, and people immediately say, look, this guy isn't scared. If he isn't scared, therefore he's a survival type. If he's a survivor type, Why, that's for me, because obviously I'm not a survivor type. All you have to do to demonstrate yourself as a survivor type, one test only, is continue to communicate. Now, let's take this in a most horrible way. Supposing you stabbed a fellow, and he fell down, stretched out, as long as we were talking about dueling and killing, he is, lay there, and he was stretched out, and he kept on talking to you in a rather undisturbed tone of voice. Then suppose you got your broadsword, and you hacked him into several pieces, and he kept on talking to you in a rather undisturbed tone of voice. And you then got a big keg of gunpowder and put it under him, you blew him up and spattered him all over the scenery, and he kept on talking to you in an undisturbed tone of voice. Somewhere along the line, you would have the idea that this was a survivor type. Do you know what had happened to you as a result? You go into apathy. It is enough for a line of troops simply to keep on charging, no matter what cost of loss, a superior force, for the superior force sooner or later to throw their arms down if they can't stop this continually lawn, you know, of charge, fall back, charge, fall back, charge, fall back, charge, fall back, charge. All of a sudden, the troops who are winning will just, they'll just throw their weapons down and leave. They can see dead men out there in front of them all over the place, and yet they obviously are not winning. It isn't the bullets that win, it's the idea behind the men firing them that in essence wins. It wouldn't matter if the United States government had all the atom bombs and all the gold in the world. If an idea set in, for any reason whatsoever, in the U.S. government that it had been outboxed and that it was being outthought and the rest of it, and it got kind of confused about it, things that it hated continued to survive and continued to survive, eventually the U.S. government, armed to the teeth, would go into an apathy about the whole thing. They just quit. Now, I've seen this happen. I've seen this happen in hunting and so on. I saw a fellow one time unable to kill a porcupine. And he fired several high-caliber bullets into this porcupine. Finally took a club to this porcupine, and he stepped back. And by this time, he was getting frenziedly desperate about the whole thing. And he stepped back, and by golly, the porcupine got up tremblingly and shook its quills and kind of grunted a little bit and started to walk away. And this guy didn't reattack the porcupine. He just started to scream. That was all. Now, you've watched the mechanism of a tantrum in a child. It's just the recognition of senior survival. All you have to do to demonstrate senior survival is continue to communicate. I don't mean monotonously. But when they all think you're dead, say something. All right. So, conversationally, socially, and in the conduct of a practice, you just keep this kind of thing in mind. Either drop it cold so they fall in head over heels, or overtly attack and never go in between, you'll get it. You can walk down the street. You can tell somebody on the street to come around and see you. Of course, he might get the idea you're bothering him. You'll occasionally get a rebuff and so forth. So what? If you were just to continue to send letters out into your community, regardless of whether they were ever replied to or not, if you just continued to send them, repetitively to the same people, they would start showing up where you are. It takes 3 letters to begin that effect, and 5 letters are almost impossible to ignore. People would come around. They wouldn't have any other choice. Don't send out 1 mailing, for instance, to a mailing list. Cut your mailing list 1/3 and send 3 mailings to that 1/3 of the list, and you get more people coming in. In other words, stay alive. The best way to stay alive is just to be tremendously effective, all right? You're trying to stay alive in a practice, be effective, keep communicating. Don't take no for an answer. Never drop into this covert apologetic line, and you are very well in, believe me. I hope maybe I've solved a problem or two that you might have.